This is Stand to Reasons, hashtag STR Ask podcast, and Greg Kokel and I, Amy Hall, welcome you to our podcast. And also, we thank you for sending your questions. So you send those on Twitter, and you just use the hashtag STR Ask, and then I can see them, and then we collect them, and then we choose from them. So that's how it works, if you want to get involved with this yourself. All right, Greg, let's start with a question from Brandon Alexander. Mm-hmm. I have seen some validate rioting, especially hurting others and or damaging property, using John 2:12-16, specifically verse 15. But Bible translations vary whether he overturned the tables or the sheep slash oxen did as he drove them, not merchants, out with the whip.
Well, that particular detail, I think, is irrelevant because what you have here is Jesus coming into a circumstance and making a mess, all right? And left simply at that level, I can see how some person wishing to rationalize their inappropriate violent behavior can try to find some parallel between what Jesus did and what they do, rioting, tearing things up, even, I think, you know, shedding blood or whatever, human blood, whatever, which Jesus obviously never did, okay? But to me, this is just, and I'll give you the reasons in a moment, but when I knew this question's coming up, I'm thinking, oh, please, please. This is such an obvious example of somebody wanting to do something to express their anger for some reason, whether it's legitimate or not, and then trying to find some way to justify it by looking at Jesus' life. This was not characteristic of Jesus' life or his style, all right? That when you're mad about something, you go and you bust stuff up, all right? That is not the way of Jesus. Now, what about this particular passage? Well, this is unique. Jesus did this two times, at the beginning of his ministry and at the end of his ministry, okay? And incidentally, this kind of thing was not promoted by anybody else. You don't see in the book of Acts, Peter in Acts chapter 4 giving his testimony about Jesus and going around and tearing up things in the synagogue because the Jews are now persecuting the Christians. You don't see Paul doing that. You don't see anybody else doing it. Nobody else in the Bible makes this kind of application. That ought to be a clue, all right, already. And in fact, I'm still a little bit annoyed by this, but that's all right. Let's let it out. And nobody else is doing this. And the teachings through the rest of the scripture really preclude this kind of behavior. If possible, as far as it's within your power, be at peace with all men. That's what Romans 12 or something, or somewhere in the end of Rome, 14. I don't know. But there's lots of passages like this, okay? Make it your ambition to lead a quiet life and work with your hands. You know, there's lots and lots of things. Now, there are exceptions where we stand up and make noise, all right? And we see examples of that. But we don't stand up and break things. We don't stand up and hurt people. We don't stand up and kill people. Okay, these are all inconsistent with the Bible. And anybody who's trying to leverage a passage like this to justify their rioting in the streets is doing something completely shameful, all right? So let me verify this judgment I'm making against this foolishness by looking at the text itself. Starting in verse 14, and he found in the temple those who were selling oxen and sheep and doves and the money changers seated at their tables. And he made a scourge of cords and drove them all out of the temple with the sheep and the oxen, and he poured out the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. And to those who were selling the doves, he said, take these things away. Stop making my Father's house a place of business. And his disciples remembered that it was written, zeal for your house will consume me. And the Jews then said to him, what sign do you show to us as your authority to do these things? And Jesus said, destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. Now, the text goes on to describe that he's referring to the temple of his body, his resurrection, as Paul says in Romans chapter 1, that Jesus was declared with power to be the Son of God through the resurrection. So the resurrection shows that he is the Son of God, and he has a say-so over what happens in his Father's house. And what was going on in his Father's house was illicit business. Now, this apparently, from other texts, I think this was going on in the court of the Gentiles. And remember, he says money changers. That's cambio. That's where you take one kind of currency and you change it into another kind of currency. Okay? And my understanding is what was going on there, too, is the exchange rates were exorbitant. They were taking advantage of people coming from other countries, especially Gentiles, that wanted to make a sacrifice appropriate to their standing with the Jewish religion, and they were being charged exorbitant prices. They were being stolen from when they're trying to worship the God of Israel. And this infuriated Jesus, and therefore he did this in his Father's house because he was the Son of God in virtue, verified in virtue of the resurrection. So there is no parallel of any kind between this and people rioting except for some broken stuff. Mm-hmm. The justification is entirely different. The setting is entirely different. And it makes me angry because this is an example of bad people using a biblical justification for their badness, and it reflects badly on the Bible instead of on them. And they are the ones to fault, not Scripture. They are not justified by this text.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you've hit on all the major points, Greg. It seems to me that the biggest difference here is that the people who were selling things inside the temple were not supposed to be there. That's not where they belonged. Now, in a riot where people are going in and they're looting, they're going to businesses who are where they're supposed to be. They're making, they're securing their livelihood. They're doing their work. They're doing everything the way they're supposed to, and they're not doing anything wrong. What Jesus was doing was removing people from the temple that should not have been there because it was supposed to be a place of prayer.
That's right.
So that seems like
he's correcting a circumstance. He's correcting a circumstance. He's not punishing people for allegedly something they did. And these riots are just their broad reactions because people are angry about a system or something. And so they're punishing innocent people as a way of getting back at the system. And there's nothing like this in here.
Mm-hmm. And we're also told you shall not steal. So every time you are not just stealing things from a business, but you're damaging their property. You are stealing money from them as they have to fix that up. You might even steal their whole business from them.
That's right.
They might go under. So, I agree, Greg. There's no way to compare the two here. Okay.
Sorry about getting so animated about this, but I just, when I hear people that are doing evil and try to justify it with some Bible verse like this, it bothers me because this reflects negatively on Christ and his bride and his word, and it's illicit. And these are the kind of people that Jesus will say, depart from me, you who work iniquity, I never knew you.
Yeah, that's a difficult thing to think about. All right, let's go to a question from Doug. We're going to go to a completely different topic now. Biblically, can step-siblings marry brothers and sisters from blended families?
Well, I don't see any reason why not. I don't know. The biblical law that this is an interesting discussion. The biblical law that speaks to that is part of the Mosaic law, and so the Mosaic law never apply to Gentiles, and it doesn't apply to anybody now as such. Now, there are moral things in the law that are either wise directives or still morally compelling or morally demanding things because they reflect universals. So even though we're not under the law, we still can't steal because stealing is wrong regardless across the board and should be in every law, even the law, even to Gentiles. So we see some of those things repeated in the New Testament. Now, what's interesting to me about this passage, and this is an observation that came from Dennis Prager, that he doesn't think that these restrictions are restrictions that were concerned, that is, that siblings don't marry, wasn't a restriction that was a concern of genetics. Although that became a problem in certain circumstances, intermarrying created difficulties in say, dynasties of kings in Europe in particular, where there was a lot of intermarrying of relatives. Okay, and so that just has a way of straining out bad genes and making them more prominent in the genetic line. He didn't think that's what was going on there, and he thinks what God is trying to do is he's trying to keep sex out of the family. Not sex between mom and dad, but everybody else. And so it's an attempt to keep children and from being sexualized. And so this is why, you know, there's a law against brothers and sisters marrying each other. And so once there's a law against it, I mean, most people aren't interested in that anyway, but under certain circumstances, that could be the case. What happens is the family, which is supposed to be a place of protection sexually for children, becomes a place where they become vulnerable to be over-sexualized by each other or by adults or something like that. Now, that to me makes a lot of sense. And it sounds consistent with the way God uses things like the law to bring protection. And even though at the time they don't know all of this stuff, like genetics and stuff like that, maybe that was in it a bit. But this other way of explaining it makes a lot more sense to me. And I think now that I think about it, that same concern would apply if you're talking about – well, the question was about stepbrothers mm-hmm. and sisters. Well, if they are stepbrothers and sisters that grow up together, well, you've got a similar circumstance there and the same concern. If they are stepbrothers and sisters that are raised in different environments – and then there becomes a blended family when you have, you know, de facto adults that are part of that relationship and are close together. I think that essentially is a different circumstance. If the rationale that Dennis Prager has offered here as a thoughtful Jewish person who understands the law, written a lot of books about it, then all one has to do is ask if the circumstance, that kind of circumstance of sexualizing the family is evident in this relationship of stepchildren. So if they're like a 10-year-old and 11-year-old stepchildren, well, then you don't want any of that going on, obviously, even though they're not related genetically, because that brings in an element of sexualizing the family environment, the intimate, close family environment where there should be protection from that. And you don't want that. So,
yeah, I think that's helpful, Greg. I agree. It's two different situations if it's a family where they come together when they're children and they're growing up together versus the parents get married and maybe they don't ever live together in the same house. I think that's a different situation. I wonder, I can't remember now if there are any laws in the Old Testament about the children of your father's wife. I don't know. I can't even remember if there's anything like that. I guess mm-hmm. that would be something to look at. But I agree that... those are two different situations. And I would say if they're growing up together, I wouldn't say that's any different from actually being siblings.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because this same kind of question would apply to adoption. So if you have an adopted child, you're not genetically connected to them, then why not pursue a relationship like that? You know, if you get divorced, then marry your kid. Actually, this happened recently in recent times. Woody Allen did that, and he married his adopted daughter, who was much younger than he was, and it was a terrible, terrible scandal. Now, you could argue, well, there's no genetic connection there, but it did seem that untoward because of the relationship, the older man and the younger woman, that under his authority of some sort in his household, it smacks of abusiveness, sexual abusiveness. I don't know anything about the private lives, so I'm not implying that, but I'm just saying there was quite an uproar because it seemed untoward, inappropriate, and for the reasons that I just mentioned that Dennis Prager has brought up. So there's another example. If it's okay, if it's just the genetic thing, then what's the problem of, you know, adopting kids and then considering them as options for marriage when they're teenagers or young adults or whatever? And you might be 15 or 20 years older or whatever, but it's, you know, no genetic connection. No, I think there's more to it than that.
Yeah, I think we have a moral intuition about that. You mentioned in the case of Woody Allen, even if there's no law against it, I think we have a moral intuition. And obviously, we have to train our moral intuitions, but sometimes we can't quite explain why something feels icky or wrong. Right. And yet we're actually correct that it's wrong. And because I don't know if that's our conscience or whatever it is, we just have a sense sometimes. So maybe that will
be. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
You know, this also raises the question, if Prager's right, and I think it's common sense, and if nothing else, it seems obviously to be a parallel reason why God might have given these rules, then that means sexualizing children in any way is problematic. And so this idea that a former president mentioned a while back, that we have to have sex education appropriate for kindergartners, there is no sex education that's appropriate for kindergartners. And all of this effort to get all of this sexualized material down into the lowest levels of our educational system is traumatizing. I mean, it's scandalous. Let me put it that way. It's scandalous because children ought not to carry that burden. You know, this reminds me of and I'll quickly end with this. We need to move on to other things. But Corrie Ten Boom, in her book, The Hiding Place, talks about her father engaging her in a conversation about what she read in the scripture that was called sex sin. And she was a girl. So she's riding on the train with her dad, and she reads this phrase in her Dutch Bible, and she says, "Papa, what is sex sin?" And her father says, "Corey, can you get this big case off the suitcase off the rack for me?" And she said, "Papa, I can't do that. It's too heavy." He says, "You're right. That is too heavy for you. And this concept you're asking about is also too heavy for you. And so I want you to let Papa carry that for you until you are strong enough to carry it yourself." Now, what a magnificent anecdote, mm-hmm. and what a beautiful way of expressing a very important thing. We are sexualizing in our culture our kids way too early. And this put burdens on them and gives them exposure to things that they should not be burdened with or exposed to at the ages that they are.
Well, thanks, Greg. In the last minute we have here, I just want to let you guys know that there is another way to send in questions. I've had some requests about this. So we are taking your questions if you send them through our website. All you need to do is go to the contact page. And then when you choose which category to go to, just choose I have another question. And as long as you put, hey, this is for hashtag STRask, and you keep it short, then we'll consider it. So just so you know, if you send me a long question, we cannot use the really long questions. So send those through the contact page. Say it's for hashtag STRask. Keep it short and you can participate, because I realize a lot of people don't have Twitter. A lot of people are dropping Twitter for various reasons. So we still want you to be able to send your questions in, because the more questions we have, the more we have to choose from, the better this show will be for you. And we'd also love to answer your questions, so you stop having that question. So anyway, thank you, everyone. We appreciate you listening, and we look forward to hearing from you. This is Amy Hall and Greg Kokel for Stand to Reason.